That is correct, yeah.
Well, I think, Mr. President, that it's something that we ought to talk about. There are many of us in this body who are questioning whether we have to take up this bill at this time. And there's been some discussion earlier in the day on the previous bill, the Senate version of the bill, where we're wondering why there has to be a suspension of the Constitution and an urgency declared. As I understand it, the reason for those rules that are in the Constitution is to make sure that bills that come before this body get full consideration and deliberation, not only by the members of this body, but also by the members of the public. Now, we've had a bill that just passed from the House that no one in this body, at least in our side of the aisle, has seen or looked at. I'm quite sure that members of the public haven't looked at it. I think it is only fair and just and right that the Constitution be honored and that we give full consideration to this bill. And since we are not facing final adjournment or a natural disaster or any other compelling reason that would call us upon us to suspend the Constitution, I think it only makes sense that we stick with normal procedure and give this bill its normal process through the proceedings. And so, Mr. Chairman or Mr. President, I think that we need to have a roll call vote on this issue, and I would urge that members not throw out the Constitution in order to get something done in which there is no urgency to get it done. I think we ought to wait till we get the forecast of this of our budget in place next week, and we have plenty of time to take this bill up. We're not going to have any contracts get let any sooner. We're not going to have any work get started any sooner. But we need to make sure that we can afford this and that we understand what our whole budget picture is. And I think that it's only right that we not suspend the Constitution, but we do this in normal fashion.
There will be a roll call. On the motion, Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, I rise in support of certainly my good friend Senator Hahn, and also to say that we just got this bill. Actually, Senator Roebling and I have spent probably 10 minutes on it, but that's all. I dare say that there's not a Republican in this room, and probably a good many Democrats, that have looked at this bill. And as we think about what our obligations are as legislators tonight, I think that we've got to think long and hard about an $8 billion bill and simply taking it on and passing it out without anybody having any knowledge at all, frankly, about what's in this bill. We found things in the back room just a few minutes ago that none of us had an idea were in this bill. And I think more analysis certainly needs to be done. And I would also say, again, in conjunction with Senator Hahn, what's the urgency? What's the need here? We've got processes within the Senate, the first, second, third reading, the three-day deal, and we ought to follow those processes so that we, and as Senator Hahn has pointed out, the public have some notion as to what this bill is all about. This bill will affect every Minnesotan. There's no question about it. Every Minnesotan will have a piece of this bill ultimately. Everybody, nearly everybody, buys gasoline. And everybody is going to be impacted whether they buy gasoline or not by what they otherwise buy in the grocery stores or anywhere else. So this has an enormous impact on the citizens of Minnesota. And I think certainly the people in this chamber ought to know what's in this bill. In fact, the people of Minnesota ought to know what's in this bill. And I would certainly urge certainly all my Republicans and certainly all my Democratic friends to let's slow down, let's take a long look, let's make sure this is a good bill. But for goodness sakes, let's not just jam it through tonight and just kind of wonder what happened tomorrow, because that's not the way we're supposed to legislate. The folks back home didn't send us up here to legislate that way. They want to be thoughtful, studied, frankly, to analyze these kind of things and to come to an understanding of what we're doing. There's not a person in this room, dare say, perhaps other than Senator Murphy, that really understands this bill and it has any notion at all about what it's all about. So I would urge a no vote on the suspension of the rules.
Senator Hahn.
Mr. President, and I guess part of my plea here is I'm asking for the majority, and maybe Senator Pogomo or somebody else, to explain to the body, explain to the minority, explain to the public why we have an urgency. What is it that is urgent about making sure we pass this bill tonight when none of us have read it, when the public isn't aware of it, when we don't know what the forecast says? And I would think the public needs to have an explanation of why we have to suspend the Constitution and do this tonight. Why don't we go home? Why don't we come back tomorrow? Why don't we give us a chance to look at amendments, look at a discussion? Why don't we take this up tomorrow or next week? As I said, there is no urgency here. No contracts are going to be threatened. We're not faced with adjournment. We're not faced with anything that would impede us from taking this up in the normal course of business. And so I think the majority party and the majority leader have an obligation to explain to this body and the public why we have to suspend the Constitution and an urgency has to be declared to take this up. And so I respectfully ask, Mr. President, that we have an answer from the majority party on what the reason is for the urgency.
Further discussion on a motion by Senator Pogemiller to suspend the rules. Senator Vandiver.
Well, Mr. President, I think Senator Hahn asked the Majority Leader a question as to what the reason was for this and if he could give the public an explanation. But if he doesn't want to answer it, I could maybe provide some insight. Senator Pogemiller yield?
He will yield.
Senator Pogemiller, would you care to answer Senator Hahn's question? If I could restate it if you didn't hear it.
Senator Pogemiller.
Well, Mr. President, this is an issue that's been around a decade, 15 years. We have about a 38-page bill here that I'm pretty confident that everybody will be able to read every line of the bill during the debate here in the next hour or two. And the bill, by and large, has been processed by the Senate. We were debating it earlier. The House has some different items in the bill that I'm sure will be explained during the process of the debate. We have a bill that is supported by the statewide Chamber of Commerce, by all of labor, and I think by most citizens of the state who are maybe not the particulars of the bill, but they support the idea that we should invest in our infrastructure in Minnesota. So I think I've just received, and I know you've got excellent staff, but I've received a bill check that says Omnibus Transportation Funding Bill updated to reflect House amendments. So I, you know, that's 3-4 pages. I'm pretty comfortable. I'm not on the Transportation Committee, but I've got a real good sense of what's in this bill. And I think if you read the chamber letter and read the 38 pages here in the next hour or so, I think if people aren't comfortable at that moment, perhaps there won't be enough votes to pass the bill. But my sense is that people will be comfortable.
Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Leader. Well, this is the first time in my experience in the legislature that the fact that the Chamber of Commerce supported a bill, rose it to crisis level, and required us to suspend the Constitution to pass it. So I think maybe Senator Hahn and the Minority Leader, Senator Sengem, have a good point. This should probably be done during the day, maybe, when there's some people watching, and it is a momentous bill in terms of the amount of tax increases in it, and I think the public deserves that 3 days. There's a reason it's in the Constitution, and let's go with that, members.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, I heard the Senate Majority Leader say that we've worked on this for 10 years. We've waited a decade. I think I heard Senator Murphy say that, too. Well, then we can wait 10 more days. What is going to happen in the next 10 days that we can't wait? That we can't wait for the general public to look at this bill? Came from the House, but it's been amended so many times, I wouldn't be surprised if there were a lot of people that were watching here tonight that have no idea what's in this bill. I've looked at a couple of the sections in it, and I can honestly tell you that I'm a little puzzled as to what we're doing, and we're not going to talk about the bill right now until we vote on this motion, Mr. President. I understand that, but 10 days will give us a whole lot more information. It will give the general public a huge benefit by seeing the context of the decisions that we're making. We're going to have an economic forecast. We may be billions in terms of deficits. And then to impose billions of dollars of taxes on top of that recession could be contributing to a crisis. Couldn't we wait 10 days to make sure that we don't contribute to the financial crisis in the state of Minnesota? I think it's worth 10 days.
Mr. President.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think that this body should recognize that if there is any urgency in this matter at all, And I think there is an urgency. The urgency is related to us understanding the status of our budget. That is the urgency. And what that urgency would suggest is we do not speed up this process, but that we slow it down and that we wait until we get that forecast, until we do understand what our financial picture is. I don't think there is a single county board in this state that would adopt a major spending or taxing provision if they did not understand what their budget was like when they did it. I don't think anybody would do that. I think it is irresponsible for this body and the majority in this body to force a huge decision on one of the largest tax increases in Minnesota history when we do not yet know what the status of our financial picture is. And so if there is any urgency in this matter, it is the urgency to make sure that we do this with our eyes open. There's not an urgency to rush into it. This is the objection that I have, and I understand, Mr. Majority Leader, that there are a lot of people that support this, and I understand there are a lot of people who think there's a need for this particular bill. There's more people who understand there's a need for transportation funding, but maybe not this approach to it. And all those things being said, there's nothing about any of that that doesn't say we can't take this bill up tomorrow or Monday or Tuesday and get it processed in normal fashion with full exposure to the public, and all that would not make any difference in terms of its implementation or its final effect. And one has to just believe, or at least I've come to the belief, that the reason that we have to hurry this process up is that for some reason the majority party doesn't want to know what the forecast is going to be like. They want to get this done before the forecast. And I hope that's not the case. But I'm beginning to believe that that is the only reason why we're doing this, is to get it done before we know, before the public knows what our financial situation is. And I would hope that that's not the reason. But I can't think of any other reason why that we have to make this an urgency and get it done tonight. And if there is some other reason, and I respectfully ask that the majority explain it to us. I understand people support it. That's not a reason to speed up the process. The only reason to speed up the process is if there's some dire need that if you didn't do it, the bill would get lost or not get done at all. And we're not in that danger at all. So I think we still need an answer on why we have the urgency to get this done before we know what the forecast is. And I respectfully ask that we get an answer to that.
Senator Pogemiller renews his motion on the suspension of the rules. Senator Senjum.
Just to tag on one more time, this legislature, this session, this year, will consider several hundred bills. On virtually all of them, we will go through first, second, and third reading. We will follow procedure. Almost mystically tonight, we have probably the major bill of this session. And we're saying that it is so urgent to get it done that we can't read it, we can't let the public know about it, we're just going to do it. And we're just going to get it off the shelf and out of the way. I don't think that's fair to the citizens of Minnesota. Frankly, I don't think it's fair to the legislators in this room. I think we need to go through the proper procedures, and that's first, second, and third readings. Let's do this the way that, in fact, our rules prescribed, the way our founders invented this system that we have. Let's stick by, the great traditions of this Senate. For goodness sakes, let's just not jam this down the throats of, frankly, the people in this room and also the citizens of Minnesota. Let's take a long, hard, studied look at what we're doing. We can come together on a good transportation bill. There's no reason why that can't happen. But this kind of, if you will, tactic, I think, doesn't lend itself to a good session, and frankly, it doesn't lend itself to good legislation. So I would again urge the members, and urge them with every breath of air that I have, that let's not do this, let's take a studied approach, and let's do it again in the great tradition of this Senate.
Secretary will take the roll. Senate's under call. All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 45 ayes and 21 nays, the motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I would move, I think I just want to recognize Senator Murphy.
I think we give it its second reading.
House file 2800.
Second reading. Okay, now.
Now I'd like to recognize Senator Murphy.
Senator Murphy.
For discussion and concise discussion.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members will be working off the House file now, 2800, and I'm going to point to the changes that the House made to the bill that we discussed earlier. Members, some of the amounts have changed, but that's because we moved that half cent to a quarter cent, so there's a vast reduction of money available for transit and road projects in the metropolitan area. With that said, you can see those changes in the first couple of pages, members, in reflection to the monies. If you, and I'll just highlight the substantive changes. One is on page 15 of the bill. It talks about an effective date, and this is for the vehicle license tab provision in the bill. This was changed so that the folks over at the Department of Vehicle Service can actually implement this law and make it work, and that's why those effective dates on that chapter were changed. Also, on the low income, on the same page, page 15, just a little bit lower down in the bill, on line 28 is a line, and this goes, this is part of what the tax chair has been talking about. This is a low income tax credit. There was, on line 28, there was a new line entered to be eligible for this tax credit. The House did a good job in picking this up, but number three there is a United States citizen or lawfully present in the United States to qualify for this refund, and obviously that's everybody wants that to happen, so I think that that's a pretty non-controversial change. The next change is in the chapter that starts on page 17 in section 8, that's the motor vehicle lease sales tax revenues. This, and it's the language is on the next page, on page 18. The changes that are crucial start on line 10, where it says 50% to Greater Minnesota Transit. That's what half of that account was always going to be used for. And if you look at number two right below that, it says 50% will go to the county state aid fund. And this is going to go to take care of metro counties, except for Hennepin and Ramsey, as it is written here. The theory behind this is with the slash of the half cent sales tax down to a quarter cent, that left a huge hole in the road money that a lot of the metro counties were going to get. So what we did was, and we do it in another section of the bill too, but what we did was we took a portion of this lease tax money. We still pay the tax credit with it. Transit accounts in Greater Minnesota still get their portion of it. And what we do with 50% of what's left over after the tax credit is we give it to those counties who saw a massive loss of money in this bill by reducing that half-cent sales tax down to a quarter. Earlier, this year, we jettisoned all the wheelage tax provisions. And once again, counties like Scott, Carver, Dakota, Anoka County, Washington County, they got brutalized because of that. They lost a lot of money, folks. And so what we do here is it's an attempt to try to make some of that money back up for our local jurisdictions. Anybody that represents Dakota County can tell you what's going on there. No east-west roads of regional significance. I mean, they just don't have any. If you want to go east-west, you have to drive 20 miles out of your way. And so counties like Dakota, Washington, Carver, Scott, Anoka, they're going to get a little boost with this, and I think that it's appropriate knowing that, Mr. President, that the county you represent lost some money in the slash of the sales tax. And so, members, that's what page 18 is all about, those changes there. When we talk about the Metro Transportation Area sales tax, and Senator Dibble will be able to fill you in there a little bit more, but what the Chamber of Commerce was concerned about was a lot of counties adopting in. They didn't want that. They wanted, they said if you want a taxing district, let's just name it what it is and move forward. And we thought, well, okay, at some later date, if, 10 years down the road, if some county wants to get in, as a legislature, we can always make those changes. So I thought it was a reasonable request. But what that says is that quarter cent that's still left out there, only metropolitan counties can access that. No collar counties, no allowances for building the North Star up through Stearns County, none of that. So what that chapter does, starting on page 18, is it lowers that sales tax from half a cent to a quarter cent. And then it puts in those provisos that says that it's only the Met counties. The rest of that chapter is all just as Senator Dibble and some of the representatives have worked on. It's the Joint Powers Board, the Gears Committee. It's all it was all very well done. And on page 22, it specifically states that that this money is all to be used for transit. That was another request from the Chamber of Commerce, and we didn't think that was unreasonable, knowing that it was going to help us get this bill passed today. Members, there's two other changes, I believe, that I need to mention. One is on the flexible highway account. This is that account that we deal with every 6 years. It's 5% of the total money that MnDOT gets on their dedicated, constitutionally dedicated revenue sources. What we do here is we also take a portion of this flexible highway account. We're still going to do what is required in the bill. We're still going to make sure that we put money in our safety improvements account and roads of regional significance. And our turnback account is actually, we do have a little bit of extra money there. So hopefully we can get these turnbacks taken care of as they come up. What we're going to do here is we're taking 50% of the new revenue that's going to go into this 5% account. This is based on a percentage, so if we increase the gas tax, there's going to be more money available. There's going to be more money in this account. So what we plan on doing is take 50% of that excess money and once again apply it to those, to those counties, Anoka, Washington, Dakota, Scott, Carver counties, once again, to kind of backfill their loss of road money from the switch from half a cent down to a quarter. It also goes on to say, as I said earlier, we're still going to provide money for the safety account and routes of regional significance. You'll notice that part of the changes that were made in the House to the bill are also on page 31, and there's a line in there that starts on page 30, and it talks about the revenue within the flexible highway account. This is the language that staff put together to make sure that we are calculating what the new revenues to that 5% account are, so that it's done according to law and the way that and actually the way that makes sense, so that those counties, once again, Anoka, Washington, Dakota, Scott, Carver, get a little extra kick. There was no changes to the Trunk Highway Bridge Improvement Program. That's still the same as we had talked about earlier. And then, members, I believe the last change starts on page 37, section 9. And what we're asking here for is we're asking for the chair of the Metropolitan Council, some appointees by the governor, and some other appointees. Most of the appointees are done by the governor, but there's going to be a couple that are appointed by the House of Representatives, a couple appointed by the Senate. And what we're going to do is we're going to form a task force, because according to this document, and the Chamber of Commerce read this document, I can guarantee you that, it shows that we've been paying too much to some contractors, and we haven't been asking for that money back, one. And two, there's been these cost overruns, which have become habitual. And you know, there's a lot of people that are just tired of it. And what we're doing with this Section 9 is we're going to put a group of people together, a bipartisan group. We're going to take a look at how we can make our contracting in MnDOT more effective. And there's a report in this. It's due back. Well, let's see if I can find that date here. It's December 15th of 08. And once again, this there's an expiration date on this task force. But basically, folks, what we want to do is, you know, we are asking people to pay more. When we heard this bill earlier in the day, it was $7.7 billion of new road investment for a 10-year construction period. Now, with the changes in the sales tax, it's $6.6 billion over 10 years. Now, remember what the goal was. The goal was over $20 billion for 10 years. So now we're only at $6.5 billion. So we've cut this bill way down, and I think that's one of the reasons why people like David Olson and the Chamber of Commerce stepped up and said, you know, we're gonna help you try to move this forward, because it's about time to get her done. Now, this task force, and most of the time, you know, we don't really like putting task force together and things like that, but it's imperative. Once again, in the bridge account, we are guaranteeing people by 2018 all those fracture critical bridges in Tier 1, which are bridges like Lafayette, Stillwater, Hastings Bridge, fracture critical, less than 50% efficiency rating, they're going to get fixed. We are going to guarantee that they get fixed. With this, we're going to get information back so that we can guarantee the public that when they go to the gas pump and they put $20 in their car and they pay the appropriate gas tax, that money is going to get spent wisely. Now, is there a reason why we've had a multitude of cost overruns on our construction projects? Yeah, I think sometimes there's probably good reasons. I mean, nobody's giving away concrete or steel or anything like that anymore. Labor prices have went up, but there's still project creep that goes on inside some of these contracts that we need to nip in the bud. And hopefully, this bipartisan task force that's going to be put together will be able to give us some recommendations so that we can kind of cut back on some of the project creep and ensure the voters, once again, our constituents, that their gas tax money, their constitutionally dedicated money for roads and bridges, is going to be spent wisely. Now, members, those are the changes to the bill. Everything else is still the same. And I would stand for amendments or questions.
Discussion on House File 2800. Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Murphy, I'm going through the bill as fast as I can here. There are 38 pages of legal-sized paper that we have to peruse, and I'm not that quick. But a couple of things that I've noticed just in going through the beginning of the bill, on page 2, line 3, there is a transfer basically from the general fund of $2.775 million. We saw the early forecast, and in that forecast were $373 million short. And I think everyone in this body anticipates that when we get the February 28th forecast, we will be at least double, and probably some people say even triple that amount short. And so my question about that particular line is, does this not make our shortfall out of the general fund even greater than what it is currently with the budget projections?
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'm Senator Wergen. I'm trying to figure out if you're talking about the general fund appropriations that are made in 09 of $2.7 million on page 1. Is that the money you're talking about?
Senator Murphy, I apologize. It's 1.29, not 2.3. That's a separate question. Page 1, line 29, general fund, 2009 appropriation, $2.775 million. Am I reading that wrong?
Senator Wergen, there has traditionally always been money in the transportation bill that has been general fund money. It's never been very much. But we took this bill through Finance Committee. Senator Cohen, he pared it back, and quite honestly, this is about the bottom line. About half of that number that you see there on page 1 goes to help fund Greater Minnesota Transit, and it was the only way that we could cover up their shortfall, Senator Wergen. And we just can't, I mean, we can't leave Greater Minnesota in the lurch here. This is a lower general fund number than we've had in our bill in previous years. So Senator Cohen did his job in making sure that we pared the bill back as much as reasonably possible, and has also asked that after this is done, if it's enacted into law, there's going to be a second round of cuts coming through here. We may have to dump more money back. Senator Wergen, for right now, we've... that's about it. We've got $2.7 million in this bill. And like I say, it's less than we've had in previous years.
Senator Dibble, did you have a...
thank you, Mr. President. Yes, and
a little help to this.
To Senator Wergen's inquiry, it's important for the members to know that, in fact, this bill does a great deal to assist with the potential deficit that we're going to be facing once the February forecast. In Metro Transit alone, members, we're looking at a $25 million or so shortfall that we would have to come up with from general fund sources, but for this bill and the sales tax that we raised in this bill. Right off the top, $30 million or so is going straight into Metro Transit operations for the purpose of dealing with that shortfall, that deficit that we anticipate. So there's far, far less. As well as there's not the standing appropriation, you know, standard appropriation that we make out of the general fund for Metro Transit. So there's a great deal of effort, in fact, to lessen our exposure in the general fund with this bill. And so, to Senator Wergen's question, quite the opposite is true.
Mr. President, thank you, Senator.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senators Dibble and Murphy. I understand what you're saying, but when you say this is going to help the general fund, we're helping the general fund through a tax increase. I don't know if you and I would both call that help. I think we differ on that probably significantly. So this does, in essence, short currently the general fund by $2.775 million extra. Senator Murphy, then I also noticed that just a little ways further on in the bill, there is a $20 per vehicle wheelage fee. Am I understanding correctly that that is in certain counties?
No, Senator Wergen, actually, there is no wheelage tax in this bill. We tried to do the metropolitan county wheelage tax fix. Too many people objected. We took it out. What that money is in lieu of paying sales tax on automobiles. It's just a flat rate. Everybody pays it. We always have. We always have. That's not an increase. We always have paid that.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Murphy, like I said, I'm just making my way through the bill. Page 19, line 31, if I have it correct, am I reading correct that if this quarter percent sales tax is to go in, the city of Minneapolis can legally can exceed the maximum legal limit for sales tax within their city? They're given that permission in this bill to go above and beyond what is now the maximum legal limit?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Wergen, this quarter cent does not count towards their legal limit, is what the bill does.
Senator Wergen.
Mr. President, so Senator Murphy, I'm correct in saying that Minneapolis can now exceed the maximum allowable legal limit under the sales tax laws.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. President, Senator Wergen, we've done that before. I think we did that for a baseball stadium.
Senator, further discussion? Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, and members, I just want to go through a couple things here. First off, Senator Murphy, thanks for, you know, you're a good transportation chairman, and you came forward with, I guess I'll call it the mother load of a bill. And it's a little bit too rich for my blood in that, you know, the $6.6 billion, and when you look at it, that's going to be about $250 per person tax, anybody that files their income tax in the state. I believe there's about 3 million people. And any way you cut it, it's going to be about $250 million. But let me touch on some things. Some of the stuff that happened, you know, during the day today, we talked about this bill would improve safety, and that's there's probably some, you know, I guess if you spend enough money on it. But keep in mind, I think the death rate in 2006 was lower than any time since 1948. We're doing a pretty good job of actually in the last few years to bringing that down, and let's hope that we can continue to do that. Some of the things that people are in here talking about, and I want to talk about a few things, because if you vote for the bill and you get the things that you seem to think you want, take a look at what we've already got. We sat here and we voted in $700 million to $800 million for a light rail system. A light rail system. Of course, a lot of people are saying it's a great success. It has not helped congestion at all, as you all know. We put it in an area where It hasn't helped in the metropolitan area. And as most people know, the ridership, 50%, is at night and on weekends. And all Dan is on the phone. I used to call it the train to nowhere. I don't do that anymore because it hurts his feelings. So, because it goes through his district, so I won't do that tonight, but I guess I'll call it the entertainment train. It's the entertainment train. It's $700 million we spent on transit. Now what we're going to do is, you're listening to all of this about Minneapolis to St. Paul and block off the highways that are going across there. Think of what, I will tell you, if we would have spent $700 or $800 million on buses, we would have had the finest transit system probably in the world. Say nothing about what we're going to add to it now. And how do we do that? We already subsidize it $297 million every 2 years. Now we talk about a $30 million shortfall that Senator Dibble just mentioned. Well, you know what would really be good if you would think about this? Why don't we, instead of not take tickets, why don't we take tickets on the light rail, and why don't we lift the costs up a little bit? Why should somebody that rides the light rail or ride any other bus system in the metropolitan area, why at the end of the year should we subsidize $7 to $9 million? $7,000 to $9,000 per riders. We have put a ton of money into it. And basically what we're going to do now is people are going to get taxed big time to do it all over again for about 4.5% of the population in the state of Minnesota. 96% of the people move, recreate, and do everything by car. And we are putting tons of money into the mass transit in the metropolitan area, and now you're going to tax people big time for it. I hope that people look at that, because that is something that has been one of the biggest boondoggles, and I know that the plenty administration and everybody else is telling us what a wonderful, successful thing. And I guess they're fortunate because we built a stadium near it. I just don't buy into that. The other thing that has happened, and I think these are the things that a lot of Minnesotans are probably wondering. We've heard this argument about 30,000 jobs. Well, I mean, in my back of my mind, I was thinking 30,000 jobs. So what I did is I called the Flatiron people. They're building the bridge for $450 million or whatever it is. They have about 350 workers now. In the summer, they're going to have maybe 450. Maybe they'll get up to 500. So for a $500 million project, we got like 500 workers. Under this program, which I don't understand, somebody says we're going to have 30,000 workers. And the only thing that ran through my mind is, I wonder if they're going to have like rickshaws, and they're going to carry like 30 or 40 bricks each, and they'll have like 5,000 people bringing the bricks to build the bridge. Or how do we get to 30,000 people? I mean, what a stretch that was. And how it doesn't make any sense. It's kind of like if somebody opens up a McDonald's store and all of a sudden we're going to add a farmer or two that's going to get to raise the beef, and then we're going to have a couple people hired that are going to work in the packing company, and then we're going to have a truckers, and we're, you know. So that, to me, was a pretty bogus number, but that's things that we're doing. I can tell you the other thing that has happened that I personally haven't bought into, and I probably won't buy into because I've been here for a period of years and I've served on the Transportation Committee, and I tell everybody this. For 8 years under Governor Carlson, we did absolutely nothing. Just about zip. In fact, Speaker Swiggum and I, we used to have to beg to get the highway commissioner down into our area to do a small little project that we finally got done after a long time. Then we had Governor Ventura, and Governor Ventura got elected on exactly what you people are reversing. He got elected because people said my license plates are $400, $500, $600, $700, $800 or $1,000. He got elected on that I will do something about it. And when we had the Democrats, Republicans, and Ventura and the three-legged stool, what did he want? He became a hero in the state of Minnesota by lowering license plates, not lifting them up, by lowering them. When people go and buy their license plates, I will tell you something. When they start writing out big checks, and in this bill, if you think people don't buy new cars, yes, they do buy new cars. People do trade cars relatively quite often. So that was another thing that that's in the bill that I thought was really heavy. But the bottom line is this. We're going to come out with a forecast, and a lot of people are going to have egg on their face that they just passed this massive tax bill. And whether you like it or not, it is a massive tax bill. I won't say it's the largest, but other people have said that it's the largest in the state's history. I don't know if it is or not. But I'll tell you, when they come out and the numbers show us a billion or a billion and a half down, and we just got done dumping on the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota $6.5-7 billion tax increase, I'm going to tell you, your phone's going to ring a little bit. And you might say, well, we're going to do things and we're really moving. And I will tell you that you can't tax people and then turn around and say, gosh, you know, people working in a nursing home need a 1% or a 2%, or our schools, we need a 1% more or whatever, and at the same time taxing individuals $250 to $300 per person. It is the mother load, and I will tell you, when we would get done with when our economic report comes out, and we might all think, well, right now tonight's pretty good, we will be talking about how we can cut $1.5 billion, or we will be giving people another huge tax increase right on top of it. And any way you cut it, that's not going to be good. It's not going to be good for our taxpayers, and it's surely not going to be good, and that it's not a way to get all of these jobs that people are talking about, which, as I told you before, I don't understand. The other thing is that, and I know the good contractors are outside and they've done a wonderful job of lobbying. They told me they have no funds, they haven't had anything. Last year was the largest construction year in the state of Minnesota on road construction and bridges. 2 years ago was the second largest. 3 years ago was the third largest. We've done I-94, 694 in Brooklyn, Highway 100 North, and I-394, I-394 HOV lane conversions, I-394 westbound auxiliary lane, Louisiana Avenue, I-494 France Avenue to Highway 212, I-494 Highway 5 Carlson Parkway. We're working on the Wakota Bridge, which we all were wanting to do for a long, long time. I-94 McKnight Road to Highway 120, Highway 100, auxiliary lanes from Highway 7 to 394, Highway 169 to Anderson Lakes Parkway. In Greater Minnesota, Highway 371 north of Little Falls, 53 in Duluth, Highway 52 in Rochester. They redid the entire everything about around Rochester. Highway 63 Rochester, Highway 14 in my area, Janesville to Waseca, and it's going to go from Waseca to Owatonna starting this summer. Interchange Highway 10 and 32 Clay County, Interchange 169 Spicer. I could go through them all, but I'm just telling you that people used to move away. They'd come back 25 years later and they'd say, you know what, Dick, you guys got the same four-lane beltway you always had. Not now, not in the last 3-4 years. 494, 694, Highway 100. We're doing a lot of projects. And granted, most contractors aren't happy that we did these projects. For some reason, I don't understand that. But it seems to me they should have been happy because we've been doing one heck of a lot in this state in the last few years in a lot of our projects. I will also tell you, which is interesting, and I might not be interesting for some people, it's been interesting for me, because I went through the bills I've had. I had a bill in the last 10 years, increasing gas tax, I've had that bill quite a few times. Light rail TIF district, I had that. Democrats didn't want it when I had the increase in the gas tax. They didn't want it when the light rail TIF district. New car surcharge, I had $100 per car. Would have brought in $200-300 million a year. I got the living heck beat out of me by the car dealers. They don't even hardly talk to me anymore. It was $100 for new cars, $75 for new cars. The Democrats said, come on, I don't want that. Bonding bills, I had a $1.7 billion bonding bill sitting in this chamber. No, no, we aren't going to do that. You use an MVET for it, and you know we can't do that one. So we sat with $1.7 billion. Nobody wanted that one, so we got nothing last year. I've had four bills on slot machines. Oh, heaven forbid, please don't bring up gambling in the state of Minnesota. We all know the reason why we can't do that one. I've had four of them for transportation. We'll give you $200 million a year. We'll pay off 5-cent gas tax. It'll do everything. The good old Racino, where we have gambling every night, but we can't do gambling in Minnesota. We'd rather tax the people than have them voluntarily give us their money every evening. We want to make sure that that $1.2 billion nonprofit, non-taxed entity hangs on itself. And let me tell you else, I had freedom to drive package, gentlemen start your engines package, on the road again package, back in the driver's seat package, rally for roads package. None of the things was very good when the Republican was trying to do a lot of these things. And that's fine. I realized I was in the minority. And I realized that there's year after year after year. What did I always want? I wanted roads and bridges. Since 1990 in this legislative body, and every time we turned around on MVET, Senator Langseth had I don't know how many bills. I had bills. And you know what people told us? You can't put money into transportation. You're going to take money from education. You're going to take money from health care. Year after year after year in this body. Now all of a sudden, for some reason, we're going to try and make it all up. And people are saying, well, geez, how come you guys haven't done anything over the years? Well, that's a good question. That's a good question. I'd like to know, too, because I've been somebody that's been always for roads and bridges. And trying to put more money into lanes that there's 96% of the people are out moving around. And I hate the idea that I have to sit here tonight and vote against this bill. But this is the mother load. I can't sit here and know that I'm going to tax every single taxpayer $250 to $300 a year for 10 straight years, year after year after year. There has to be some other ways to do this. Now, I know that Senator Murphy said one day, he said, he's looking in a great big monitor, and he said, you're looking at a little 12-inch screen. But I will tell you what, after that, there he's over there, he said that to me, and he's right. The only difference is that after the governor gets done vetoing this thing, his whole big screen is gone away. And I'm still going to be looking in my little 12-inch, waiting to see if we can expand it into something else. So it's always good here talking about transportation. Senator Murphy is a good transportation leader, and he's a good friend, and he's a great guy. I just think along the line, so many people outside the chambers here are lined up and told him we got to load it up, load it up, load it up, and it's loaded up. But I just think it's way too heavy. Thank you.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, and for the folks who are watching what's going on with these bills over the years, and you know, first I just want to remind Senator Day that at one time on the Senate floor, he called the governor's bonding request for transportation foo-foo dust. I don't know if you remember that, Senator Day. I do. It was a pretty good quote. Made all the papers. It was quite comical. But anyway, yes, raising taxes gives everybody heartburn. And I don't think anybody proposes raising taxes in the Senate unless they feel there's a good reason. We have a good reason. But Senator Day, when you're talking about the money that is in this bill, the 05 bill, which I was the chief author, actually the co-author with Senator Arata in 05, that bill raised $12 billion over 10 years. When we started, the bill that was vetoed last year was about $8.5 billion raised over 10 years. When we started this year, we had basically the same money, about $8.5 billion in the bill. We did some gyrations. We cut it down to $7.7 billion of new spending for 10 years. And now, with the compromise language that was brought forth by the Chamber of Commerce, we will raise and spend an additional $6.6 billion over a 10-year period. Now, once again, folks, the need is over $20 billion for a 10-year period, and I simply ask the question, and, you know, let's remember what the legislative auditor said about acquiring debt with no way of paying for it. It will lead to disaster. It will lead to ruin. My only question is, if not now, when? If not with this mechanism, how? If not now, when?
Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A24 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A24 amendment.
Senator Vandiver moves to amend House File 2800 as follows. Page 18, delete Article 4. This is Amendment A24.
On the amendment, Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. President. First, I would request a roll call on this.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call.
Thank you, Mr. President. What this amendment does, members, is it eliminates the sales tax increase in the bill. As I said earlier, I think in a recession, most states and the federal government are going in a little different direction. They're lowering taxes, they're doing rebates or something to get the economy going. They're not sucking more money out of people's pockets. So this eliminates that increase. And as was said before, the sales tax is the most regressive tax. And as our good tax chair said, there is no good reason to do a bad thing. So I would appreciate your support on this, members.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. I oppose this amendment. It completely guts the bill's member, and I would request a red vote.
Is there further discussion on the A24 amendment? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A24 amendment. The Senate is under call. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The Secretary will close the roll. There being 19 ayes and 47 nays, the amendment does not prevail. Further discussion on House File 2800. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A27 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A27 amendment.
Senator Roebling moves to amend House File 2800 as follows, page 19, line 23. This is Amendment A27.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. Members, this is an amendment to put this sales tax provision, which we just voted to leave in, on the ballot as a referendum question. And currently, the bill has it as a referendum question for Greater Minnesota. And this is just equalizing that opportunity for the voters of our state to decide whether or not they think that the sales tax is the appropriate tax to use to fund the programs in this bill. And I see it as an equity issue as a metropolitan legislator to have the same opportunity as Greater Minnesota residents have on deciding whether or not to raise their taxes. I know when we took up a bill a week ago, we had a lot of people on both sides of the aisle talking about how regressive the sales tax is. And some people on both sides of the aisle voted against the constitutional provision because they do not believe the sales tax is the right tax to increase during this time of recession in particular. And it seems ironic now to have this sales tax included in here with no referendum provision. The sales tax increase we were proposing last week, which is going to be on the ballot this fall, is on the ballot. I mean, people will get to decide if they're going to vote for it or not. And I'm just trying to do the same thing with this. I'm hoping that members will choose to put it on. It would be on the ballot this fall in the metropolitan area, and it would ask the voters if they wanted to increase the sales tax by 0.25% for transportation improvements. And I hope you'll join me in supporting this.
So further discussion on the A27 amendment. Further discussion. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would urge a no vote, members, for this provision. Members, the time to act has come. There will be sufficient voter accountability. We're going to be held to account for this vote. The county commissioners who moved to enact this tax by referendum will be held to account. I'll also remind members that if we further delay and further delay, the legislative auditor has told us the picture is grim, getting grimmer, and we have a deficit that we're facing for Metro Transit operations. Further delay will just cause further harm. It's time to step up to leadership and just simply make this happen. Thank you.
Senator Ortman.
Oh, thank you. Mr. President, thank you, Senator Fischbach. Mr. President, I'd like to ask for a roll call vote on this very important amendment.
A roll call vote has been requested. There will be a roll call vote.
Thank you. And I'm wondering if Senator Dibble will yield.
He will yield, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President, and Senator Dibble. I'm wondering if you can explain to Minnesotans the justification for allowing a referendum for counties in Greater Minnesota to opt into this program, but not allowing a referendum for the counties in the metro area, including Carver, Scott, and the other counties in the seven-county metro area. Why is a referendum appropriate for Greater Minnesota and not for the Twin Cities metro area?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. That's a constraint of the statutes that we have to deal with, Mr. President, having to do with areas that have a population of greater than a million. And, I believe, you know, we already took a step like this when we supported a facility recently that some view was a kind of optional. This is to fund those, you know, a very vital infrastructure that's very, very important to our economy that no one can deny. We've got to take this step. Most other metro areas around the country use a small portion of their sales tax for this purpose. It's not outlandish. It's not something unusual that we're doing. And like I said, voters will have plenty of opportunity to register their opinion on this subject when we stand for election, when county commissioners stand for election.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. We recently did create an exception in the statutes, the very statutes I believe you're referring to, Senator Dibble. When we voted, this wouldn't include me, I don't believe it included many of the Republicans, but when we voted to change the statutes to allow Hennepin County to build the Twin Stadium without a referendum for the sales tax, and I can't say that that was one of the great moments in the Minnesota State Senate, nor do Minnesotans necessarily think that that was a really good precedent to set. I don't think that it's a very good argument for this sales tax increase, however, especially just coming on the heels of the Legacy Act, which again asks all of Minnesotans to vote on a sales tax. It's very inconsistent tax policy. If we want something to pass and we think we know better in the state Senate than Minnesotans, well, we'll just create a statutory exception. But if we're not so sure, maybe we'll put it on the ballot. Well, in this case, I believe the residents of Carver and Scott and Dakota County, all of the residents of the Twin Cities metro area counties, deserve the same right to vote to opt in to this system. I wonder, what are you afraid of in this bill? Are you afraid that they'll vote no? And if they would vote no, wouldn't you honor the fact that they don't want to pay sales tax at this time to pay for transit? Shouldn't they be allowed to opt in here? I would hope that the members trying to create some consistent tax policy here and some concern for the residents who have to pay these taxes, that you all support Senator Roebling's amendment.
So further discussion on the 827 amendment. Seeing none, the question occurs on the 827 amendment. The Secretary will take the roll. All senators voted who desire to vote. The secretary will close the roll. There being 24 ayes and 43 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on House File 2800. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A-26 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A-26 amendment.
Senator Jungbauer moves to amend House File 2800 as follows. Page 38 after line 24, insert section 10. This is amendment A-26.
On the amendment, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, the A-26 amendment, if you... As members would actually maybe want the governor to actually consider signing this, you might want to look at this amendment, members. What this amendment does is it asks the Commissioner of Finance to calculate the new money raised under this provision, and then at the end of the year, they actually rebate it back to the taxpayers, so it completely offsets it. Members, if we don't have the guts to figure out where to fund the roads in our regular budget, then this equally takes it out of everybody's budget at the end of the year and gives some money back to the taxpayers, the same taxpayers whose backs we are jumping up and down on with new taxes consistently over the last 2 years.
Further discussion, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. I oppose the amendment. It completely destroys the bill.
Further discussion on the A-26 amendment. Hearing Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Murphy, since you can still collect the money and since it still goes to transportation, I don't see how it could possibly upset the bill. But you know, members, I find it kind of interesting as we go through this and as we sit in the Transportation Committee and quite honestly as we sat in other committees energy and utilities, it's really striking to me the last 2 years that 100% of our testifiers are the very self-same people that are self-servingly going to get the money out of these bills. So it seems like they have an inherent conflict of interest as they're testifying to us. Then as I'm listening to other members tell me what a great compromise this is, I keep thinking, well, who did they compromise with? Because, you know, I got this little title, the ranking minority member on transportation, and nobody asked me what I might want in this bill. So where the heck did the compromise come in? You know, I keep thinking, too, that as I sit on the commission to end poverty by 2020 and we keep on increasing the amounts of regressive tax on the poor, well, heck, we're not only never going to solve the problem of poverty, but members, we have this great self-fulfilling prophecy, you know. In the Bible, it says we're going to come to a time when the rich get richer and the poor will lose even the little they have, and that is exactly what you're doing in this bill, gutting the heart out of the poor, stomping them into submission, and all we need left is the funeral.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Senator Jungbauer. And Senator Jungbauer, there were, you and I have had many discussions since you've been on the Transportation Committee, and I've always tried to include your ideas in these bills. I'm not willing to do this because this means that once again we're robbing Peter to pay Paul. Once again, I'll point at the legislative auditor's report. Robbing Peter to pay Paul doesn't work. I mean, you know, we had an independent authority go through the department, try to figure out what was going on. It doesn't work. Now, you know, we can continue to have one amendment after another come up here and, you know, continue to do what is intended to do here, which is try to catch a lot of people on bad votes. But it's key to know, Senator Jungbauer, and especially for you to know, that your participation on our committee, I greatly appreciate it. You've brought some very good ideas to the table. One of them we hope to rectify with the Y plate issue that you brought forward. And we're going to do that by, once again, trying to build a computer system at the Department of Vehicle Services so that we can actually track what's going on out there, so that we can collect that revenue that is due to the state. But we can't do it until we get that computer, because otherwise we'll have the DVS people out chasing down every pickup truck that's got a Y plate on it between here and Crookston, and they got better things to do. We both know that. But folks, Senator Jungbauer, I believe is sincere, and I truly believe he's sincere in his words talking about the poor and the indigent. We do have a provision in here so that they do get reparated some of the money, Senator Jungbauer, but to tell everybody, you know, to put everybody in the poor and indigent category, we're not. Look around this room. Now, Senator Jungbauer, I've known you for, about 8 years now, give or take a few months of fighting here and there. You and I both know that people in our income category, we're both workers. I mean, you have your business and you go to work every day just like I used to. I'm retired now. But I think that you and I and the other members in this chamber and those of us who are firmly planted in the middle class, we can afford this. We can afford this. We can afford it. Think about it. Drive 20,000 miles, 20 miles a gallon. Just figure it at 10 cents, even though it's only 8.5, because then the numbers are easy. It's not that much. It's absolutely not that much. I figured it out back in 05 because Senator Arata and I were laughing because there was a lot of people talking about, you know, you're going to tax people right back into the Stone Age. We were laughing about it, and we figured out what it was going to cost for both of us. And we came to the conclusion that instead of stopping at Starbucks every morning, we'd just make our own coffee, and that'd take care of it. We're not asking for people to not buy diapers for their kid or formula. We're not asking them not to pay their property taxes. We're not asking people to do without a lot of the comforts that we already have. We're not. We're asking that just, you know, maybe don't go to Starbucks every day, and that'll take care of it. In greater Minnesota, where, you know, we don't have the imposition of the quarter-cent sales tax immediately, you know, for me, Senator Jungbauer, this is maybe $100 at the most. And I drive a lot. Not as much as Senator Day, but I drive a lot. So this might add to my yearly bill $100. Now, anybody that's making, you know, what do we make, 30 whatever, and then another 30 at my other job, anybody that's making $60,000, they can find $100. And you know what? If everybody kicks in their $100, we get all the potholes filled. We get all the intersections cleaned up where people die horrible deaths. We get the bridge fixed. We guarantee in the bill that the bridges are going to get fixed, period. And it's not going to cost us that much. That's the power of doing it collectively. Now, somebody in the other chamber called me a socialist earlier. If that's the definition of being a socialist, of trying to work together to build better communities, to decrease death, to increase economic opportunity, I'll wear that handle proudly then.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Murphy, I am sincere, and I don't know what you put on for miles a year, but I do know that I work in the service industry. On my personal vehicle, I put on over 36,000 miles a year. I think this many of us in the service industry are hurting from foreclosures, lack of business in general. This will put us over the edge, and we are middle class, and under normal circumstances, we could afford it. I looked in the bill and I seen LP gas, I seen liquid natural gas, our heating oils. It raises that up in one of the coldest winters we've seen in 100 years. That is a burden. It is the wrong time for this burden. Senator Murphy, we have worked together well. I do believe my amendment's good because it forces us to take a look at what is our vision for Minnesota. And I think we're spending money in a lot of wrong areas, and that's why I think it ought to go into transportation and it ought not to go in other places. But you'll also notice, Mr. President, Senator Murphy, members, I'm not trying to catch anybody in a bad vote. I didn't ask for a roll call vote. I just want people to think this through.
So further discussion on the A26 amendment. Seeing none, the question occurs on the A26 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The A26 amendment is not adopted. Is there further discussion on House File 2800? Senator Gerlach?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A52 amendment.
What was the number again? A52? Okay, the Secretary will report the A52 amendment.
Senator Gerlach moves to amend House File 2800 as follows. Page 24, delete Article 5 and insert. This is Amendment A52.
On the amendment, Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. President. This transportation debate, one of the items that really sticks in the craw of a lot of metro counties is the county state aid highway, the CASA formula. And we've often heard in our own local meetings with the county and the cities that we pay an awful lot of money into the state gas tax and the state transportation funds, and we get, in Dakota County, we get about a third of that back. And the reason is the historical CASA funding formula shortchanges us considerably. It would be the equivalent of, if you know, it locks us into a formula. This is the way it was described to me by someone else, that if you had in your home, if you had a high traffic area and the carpet in your living room, you would want to replace that, but you can't because your family budget says, oh no, we've got to replace the carpet in the basement, whether it needs it or not. And that's kind of what the CASA formula says. It says we're going to send money to certain areas, whether you need it or not, and we're going to not put it where it's needed most. The formula, I know there are some formula changes in the bill we're discussing, but it's only on new money, and I think that if it's a good policy to have it for the new money, it ought to be go for all of the money, and it ought to be 40% vehicle registrations and 60% need. And that's what it ought to be on all of the money. If this is a statewide issue, that we ought to be focusing on the statewide need. I think this is about fairness, so please support this amendment.
Is there discussion on the A52 amendment? Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, once again, the provision that is currently in the bill, Senator Gerlach, was agreed to by all 87 counties, including Dakota, Carver, Scott County. I would hate to break the deal amongst those counties, and I would hope that people vote no.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to request a roll call vote on this.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call vote. Is there further discussion on the A52 amendment? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would also, as a Metro member, as a representative of Metro District, I would speak against this amendment. Members, there's a tremendous amount of balance in this bill, and it was hard won, and it was attained through many, many difficult conversations that took course over a number of years, as a matter of fact. And the counties went to tremendously hard work to come up with this agreement. Small communities, large communities like mine, participated in that and came to this agreement. And I think that work should be honored. I think the work that we've done among ourselves as representatives of diverse areas from around the entire state should be honored as well. I understand that sometimes some areas of the state go to greater effort and that benefits other parts of the state, but we are one state and we benefit in the prosperity of all, and we all benefit from sharing those resources that are generated on a statewide basis. That's the premise of local government aid. Quality of life shouldn't be balkanized. It should be enjoyed. Similar quality of life from place to place. And that's the principle behind how we share in the CASA formula, the principle behind what we did in terms of the compromise for the new dollars.
Further discussion on the A52 amendment? Seeing none, the question occurs on the A52 amendment. The Secretary will take the roll. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The Secretary will close the roll. There being 12 ayes and 55 nays, the motion has not prevailed. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to introduce the A60 amendment.
Secretary will report the... whose name is it under, Senator Limmer? Is it...
That's a Senjim amendment.
The Secretary will report the A60 amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend House File 2800 as follows, page 13, line 28. This is amendment A60.
On the A60 amendment, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, the A60 amendment is an offering of a little creativity as far as how we pay for this increased dollar amount of transportation taxes. What we're actually doing, and if I can bring your attention to the purpose of this amendment, in order to avoid increasing the risk of economic recession in the state of Minnesota, while still trying to satisfy the state's transportation funding needs, the legislature finds it necessary to implement individual income tax rate reductions. Basically, this is an offset. If we're going to increase the tax for transportation costs via the gas tax, we're going to lower the cost on
point of order.
The income tax.
Mr. President, pursuant to Rule 35 of our Senate rules, I would request a germaneness ruling on this bill. It deals with income tax. We're talking about roads.
Discussion. Sarah Limmer.
Mr. President, the purpose of this particular amendment clearly states that it's to offset the transportation and transit funding. It recognizes the transit and transportation need. The cost of raising the tax, of course, on gas tax is certainly referred to. I believe it is germane to the bill. And I would ask you to rule in opposition to the motion before us.
Senator Limmer, could you direct me to the portion of the amendment that offsets
Mr.
the
President, tax? Advice?
Yes, please. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Rule 35. 35.2, a non-germane amendment includes one that relates to a substantially different subject or is intended to accomplish a substantially different purpose than that of the original bill to which it is proposed. And, Mr. President, under my reading, we're still trying to fund the roads. We may have a different source of funding, but the actual purpose is still the same. It is to fund roads, bridges, and transit just using a different source of money. So I would believe that this is a germane amendment.
Well, I'm reviewing the A60 amendment, and although it has a purpose clause that makes a reference to implementing the income tax rate reductions to offset transportation tax increases, the Section 3 deals with, it appears to be, income tax rates. The balance of page, it appears to me that most of the amendment refers only to income tax rates. Is there something in here that actually refers to highway taxes? I don't see anything. Is there something in the A60 amendment, Senator Limmer, that actually refers to high transportation taxes other than this purpose statement that is on the first page? Senator Senjum, could you?
Yes, President.
Senator Limmer?
I believe the reference of 1.2 and 1.3 should satisfy that.
Well, I'm going to rule the amendment not germane, although it seems to be substituting a tax, but other than the purpose statement, I don't see how it actually does what the purpose statement is saying, and I'm trying to engross what you have in here, saying that somehow the income tax is offsetting the transportation tax increases. It seems to you're substituting one fat tax for another, but I don't see that it is actually done so within this amendment. Can you? So I would rule it not germane.
Mr. President, that's your final answer?
Yes.
Well, Mr. President, I wish to appeal the rule of the President and ask for a roll call vote.
That is debatable. Senator Senjum?
Mr. President, I want to rise in support of Senator Limmer and in opposition to your decision. Tell you what, people out there know a tax is a tax is a tax is a tax. We hear that every day, and this is definitely not a different subject. It is a tax. It is as simple as that. The people in the TV audience tonight know that. The people in the chamber know that. I would have hoped perhaps that you would have known that in your decision, but I would just urge you to take another look, because I think maybe you missed on this one, but more than everything, I'd urge the Senate to ride with us on this one and overrule the chair's decision.
Further discussion?
Mr. President, a question for the President. Now, a red vote is against the ruling of the chair, and a green vote is to uphold the ruling of the chair?
The question that will be posed was, shall the decision of the President be the judgment of the Senate? That will be the question that is posed. So a green vote would be a vote in affirmation of the judgment of the President. A red vote would be against the judgment of the President. So a green vote is supporting the President. A red vote is opposed to the President's decision.
All right, Mr. President. I would ask that the chamber vote green on the ruling of the chair. Members, this amendment is clearly not germane. And we've had this discussion about bridge amendments in the past where you try to build some language into an amendment so that it has the appearance of being germane to a bill. Senator Limmer, close but no cigar. Purpose statements don't do it. Those aren't a chapter of law. People can squawk about purpose all they want, but when the rubber hits the road, since we're talking about transportation, it comes down to what's the body of your amendment. And the body of your amendment is an income tax reduction, and we don't have that in this bill. So, members, I would ask that you vote green.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I know we're discussing the motion before us of the President, but we certainly have had the discussion of whether or not gas tax and certainly the reflection of gas tax is in the bill and how we pay for your increases in your bill. We certainly have had the discussion of how the Minnesota citizens are going to afford this. And as we look at the cost of gasoline, now bordering and tiptoeing over record highs over $100 a barrel of crude oil out of the Mideast, knowing that if that persists and all of the economic forecasters are saying it most likely will, Saudi Arabia is cutting its cost or its production back, we will have a gas tax of $3.50 to $4 a gallon by this summer. That is almost a reality by the forecasters now. Now, the purpose of this amendment was to make sure that we had enough adequate funding to pay for our transit and transportation needs, and yet at the same time, I would hope, and I know our discussion was, about how to lessen that impact on our taxpayers. We have an opportunity to do that, but it has been ruled that trying to adjust, trying to offset, trying to make it a little easier on the backs of our taxpayers, this amendment is ruled non-germane. I think the whole discussion of today, whether it was earlier in the morning or whether it's late at night, has been around the affordability of whether or not our taxpayers can pay for this exorbitant cost that's now being pushed on us in just the first few days of this legislative session. Well, this is an opportunity to maybe weaken it lessen it, have a little opportunity to adjust the books a little bit so that our taxpayers don't bear the burden. As hard as this bill is presented to us, I think it is exactly germane, and that's why I have appealed the rule of the president. I hope you join us.
Senator Murphy questioned whether the decision of the president that the A-60 amendment was germane. The president ruled that the amendment was not germane. Senator Limmer appealed the decision of the president.
Mr. Chair, one more brief comment.
Senator Sengen.
Mr. Chair, I again want to appeal to the Senate on this one. Senator Limmer has brought forth, I think, a good amendment. You may not like it in terms of what it does, but I think it's a decent amendment. What he's simply talking about is a tax, you know, an income tax, a gas tax. It still comes out of the same pocket, and for him not to be able to get a vote simply because it's a different kind of tax does not seem at all logical, at least where I come from. So give Senator Limmer a break. Give him his vote on his amendment. Let's do what's right. Let's move this Senate forward in a fashion that, again, respects what he's trying to do. And I think he's doing it in an honest and sincere fashion. I know he is. This is simply an amendment. It's an idea that he has. If we're going to have a gas tax, let's give people the opportunity to reduce their income tax. It's a simple concept.
Further discussion. The question before the Senate is whether the decision of the President shall be the judgment of the Senate. A yes vote upholds the decision of the President. A no vote is in opposition to the decision of the President. The Secretary will take the roll. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The secretary will close the roll. There being 45 ayes and 21 nays, the ruling of the president is upheld. Further discussion on House File 2800. Is there further discussion? Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to offer the A-59 amendment.
And it's in the name of Senator Sengen? Senator Ortman, is it in the name of Senator Sengen?
Yes, Mr. President.
Okay, the Secretary will report the A-59 amendment.
Senator Ortman moves to amend House File 2800 as follows, page 15, line 26. This is amendment A-59.
On the amendment, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm wondering if Senator Murphy would yield.
He will yield. He will yield.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm looking at page 15, Senator Murphy, section 2, subdivision 34, the lower income motor fuels tax credit. And it says that an individual is allowed a credit against the tax imposed under this chapter if the individual has attained the age of 18 by the end of the taxable year, cannot be claimed as a dependent on another's taxpayer's return. And three, is A, a United States citizen, or B, lawfully present in the United States? And Senator Murphy, my question for you is, can you explain the purpose of subdivision 34A sub 3 to the members and to the public?
Senator Murphy.
Mr. President, and this was an amendment that was offered up by Representative Seifert in the House, and it was taken over there, and I would just have to say that we don't want to be paying credits back to people who are not in the United States lawfully or who are not citizens. I think that's simply what it says.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. President, thank you, Senator Murphy. If I understand this section correctly, and I have heard this in at least part of it, in the Transportation Committee, but I know I didn't hear the third sentence in the Transportation Committee. I'm certain that I didn't hear it in the Tax Committee. It wasn't in the previous bill, but it's here now. And I think we should be asking in this chamber some very pointed questions about this. This is very significant policy that we've never adopted in the state before. We're going to offer a tax credit to, ostensibly, for people that buy gas and pay tax on that gas. Although I did hear in Transportation Committee, you don't even have to own a car to get the tax credit. But we are going to prohibit those people that are not legal residents of the United States from receiving that tax credit. And I think that's a significant policy here. I'm wondering if there's anybody in this chamber that wants to comment about the fact that we are going to adopt that kind of a policy in this bill. I think that's a major change for many of the people in this chamber. I thought there were many people of principles who were against this kind of policy in this state. And I'm hoping that they will stand up for their principles and not fall prey to an amendment like this, which is completely against their principles, just so that they can pass this bill quickly and pass it before everybody learns what we've really done in the bigger context of the economic forecast. This provision just shows how quickly we are passing this bill and just how little thought we have given to this bill. This bill deserves to go back for reconsideration. It is not ready for a vote on this Senate floor. And I would ask members, how on earth is the Department of Revenue expected to enforce this provision? If you are not a legal resident of the United States, you're not entitled to the tax credit. How will they do that? Will they demand proof of legal residency? I didn't think we did that in this state. But now you have put it on the Department of Revenue to enforce this provision. I believe members of this chamber meant it when they said that they were against these kinds of principles. I know that I have seen them vote over and over and over again against these kinds of provisions. And I certainly hope tonight will not be an exception, that passing this bill quickly without real consideration of the economic consequences is not going to be the reason that people will reject their own principles. I hope they will vote for this amendment. Mr. President, I ask for a roll call vote on the A59 amendment.
Roll call vote has been requested. There will be a roll call vote. Is there further discussion on the A59 amendment? Senator Murphy.
Mr. President, I oppose the amendment.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A59 amendment. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The Secretary will close the roll. There being 12 ayes and 54 nays, the motion does not prevail. The A59 amendment is not adopted. Is there further discussion on House File 2800? Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A51 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A51 amendment.
Senator Vandiver moves to amend House File 2800 as follows. Pages 6 to 13, delete sections 1 to 7 and insert. This is amendment A51.
On the A51 amendment, Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. President. We've heard a lot about this bill costing somebody only $100 a year, but we know that just the 2006 Impala is $400 a year in license tab increase. So, Senator Murphy, I think that this amendment will help reduce the impact of the substantial increase in taxes in your bill and might substantially increase the chance of it not being vetoed. What the amendment does is deletes all gas tax increase but 5 cents that's in the bill. It leaves the 5 cents in there, and it ties the 5 cents to bonding, restricting the use for adding new capacity only. It also reduces the bottom tier of the income tax, hopefully removing the brunt of your painful tax increases on the poorest people in Minnesota and the lowest income earners. And the final thing is, when the bonds are paid off, it requires that bonds be issued with this and paid off with this money. It'll raise about $1.9 billion, but when those are paid off, the tax is gone. So I would appreciate your support and request a roll call on this, Mr. Chair.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call vote. Is there discussion on the A51 amendment? Senator Murphy.
Mr. President, I oppose this amendment on several different levels. The biggest one is that, Senator Vandeveer, you really need to read this legislative auditor's report about not being able to pay the debt service. $1.8 billion is, you can't pay for it with 5 cents a gallon gas tax. Members, this, I understand what people's hesitation is in voting for gas tax increases, but folks, that, you know, we just need to kind of buck up and get her done now, and this amendment is going to destroy the bill, so I would hope that people vote against it.
Sir Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, I don't think it destroys the bill. It raises substantial revenue. About $160 million a year would, I think, do debt service on $1.8 billion. I disagree with you on that. But even so, we have the excise tax money kicking in, so that could cover any discrepancy. But this provides, if $1.9 billion isn't doing anything, then I don't know what is. It provides a solution. It provides some tax relief in a recession so that we're not bucking what most other economists think. I know we have our own way of looking at things once in a while, but tax increases during a recession hasn't ever been a formula that I've seen offered as a cure. And this kind of evens that all out, Senator Murphy. And besides that, I think the governor might not veto this. I can't say that for sure, but at least it, you know, meets some of his guidelines or requests that other taxes be reduced if we're going to increase transportation taxes.
Further discussion on the A51 amendment? Seeing none, roll call has been requested. The Secretary will take the roll on the A51 amendment. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The Secretary will close the roll. There being 18 ayes and 48 nays, the motion does not prevail. The A51 amendment is not adopted. So further discussion on House File 2800. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, we've been through a lot of amendments. I think we have some more. But, Mr. President, what I want to do, and I'm going back to some of the initial comments, this bill was cast upon us. We don't know anything about what the state's economic forecast is going to be. I would move we lay this bill on the table until March 5th.
Senator Senjum has moved that the House File 2800 be laid on the table until March 5th. That motion is debatable. Is there discussion on the motion?
Discussion, Mr. President. Roll call on this one.
A roll call has been requested. Any discussion? Senator Paul Gamilla. Okay. Seeing no discussion, Senator Hand.
Mr. President, I would rise to support Senator Senjum and his motion. We've already had some discussion about this, and we're going through this, and many of us are trying to read through this and understand what some of the provisions are. There have been questions raised about where some of these provisions came from. I think it is wise and appropriate for us to lay this aside for a time and think about this and, and understand what our whole financial picture is before we adopt this bill. Again, there is no urgency to do this. And so I would just urge members to support this, and let's lay this on the table.
Just to clarify, the motion to lay on the table is debatable as to the time. The date was to March 5th. So we can debate the time that you wish to debate, lay it on the table. The motion to lay on the table itself is not debatable. So is there a discussion on that part? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the motion. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The Secretary will close the roll. There being 21 ayes and 45 nays, the motion does not prevail. Is there further discussion on House File 2800? Is there further discussion? Senator Worgen.
Thank you, Mr. President. There's a couple things I'd like to call to light before we take the final vote on this bill. I have some great concerns. Senator Dibble, you handed out a sheet that talks about transit for livable communities, and it talks about sales tax facts. And I'll grant you that what you have on here is accurate. I don't have a problem with that. I don't have time to look up every single one of them, but it appears to be. But the fact that's missing from this sheet is that Minnesota has a 6.5% sales tax already. And on the sheet that you handed out, there's only one other state whose state sales tax rate is that high already. The rest are all lower. As a matter of fact, some of the other states are at zero for a sales tax rate, and we have 6.5. And this will bring our sales tax up even higher. And if you look at the local communities, once again, we have to exempt the city of Minneapolis from the upper limit of sales tax within the law. And I know that there are inequities when you just point to a sales tax rate, because I know that various things are taxed in different states, so it's a little bit different. But one of the things that you can look at is the per capita collections of sales tax from state to state. Minnesota's average per capita sales tax is already over $100 more per person than the average of other states. In other words, our folks already pay $100 more per person in sales tax than other states do on the average. And you know, if that's not good enough, you can take it per $1,000 of income. And per $1,000 of income, every Minnesotan pays more on their sales tax than they do in the other average states. You can take a look at all of the different sales tax figures. You can look at our total tax on top of sales tax, then take a look at Minnesotans' total tax burden, and we are way above average on that. The average Minnesotans' per capita tax burden is $4,087.71. Per $1,000 of income, their average tax rate is $113.54, well above the national average. So we are above the national average on all of our taxes. And I've heard it said a few times that this isn't going to hurt folks. This isn't going to hurt folks. But it is. This is an 8.5-cent gas tax increase. Folks, it's 8.5 cents on a gallon I represent Senate District 16, and I don't know about the rest of you. Maybe some of you don't have the same thing that I do, but 67% of my people commute significant distances to work. This is going to hit them hard. I live in a fast-growth corridor. Do you know that when you open the newspapers in my district, the foreclosures just go on and on and on and on? There's a problem. Senator Murphy, you mentioned that it's only $100. You know what? There's a whole lot of them that can't afford $100. And you know how I know that? This past fall in my district, most of my school districts had bond referendums on the ballot, whether it be general operating levy or building bonds or no matter what the case was. And in many cases, that probably wouldn't have cost more than $100. And guess what? Out of all those communities, only one passed. All the rest failed because the families in my area said, we can't afford anymore. And so they don't want this tax either. Senator Murphy and others have indicated that this is going to put people to work. It's not the construction, it's not the road construction trades that are laid off in my area. It's a lot of other trades that are laid off, far more than road construction. Building trades are laid off. Factories are closing. Small restaurants have closed since we did the smoking ban. The list goes on and on and on of who's laid off. And it's not as much this sector as many other sectors of the economy in my area. It might be different in some other areas. But what concerns me the most is that here we're going to take money out of their pockets. And I'm here to tell you folks in my area, they voted overwhelmingly not to have any more money taken out of their pockets. And I know I've heard a couple of times that the Minnesota Chamber backs this package. Well, with all due respect to the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, yes, some of their members might back it, but they haven't talked to a whole lot of small businesses in my district that can't afford to increase this tax burden. 8.5 cents gas tax is not small. That's a big tax increase. And 0.25% sales tax, okay, you can say that's just 0.25%, but we did it for the Twin Stadium and we have it on the ballot coming up for the conservation amendment. How much is enough? The folks spoke overwhelmingly in the school bonds. And you know what? I think everybody values their schools, and everybody wants their schools to be healthy and wants their kids to get the best possible education. And still, they voted no to the bond referendums overwhelmingly. So please, members, vote no to this bill. Don't increase the tax burden on folks that are already losing their homes, that can't pay their heat bills. If you've read the latest articles, they've gone beyond not paying the unnecessary things. They're also now quitting to pay the necessary things. Some are letting their cars go back. Some are letting, their homes are foreclosing, but the list goes on and on. They can't make their utility payments. And we want to add a gas tax to working Minnesotans that are already struggling to make that paycheck stretch until they get the next one. Please, please vote red on this bill.
Is there further discussion on House File 2800? So further discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 2800 its third.
Mr. President.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. Looks like we're coming down to the final vote or the vote on this bill, and I would like to remind members once more that what we're doing is very unorthodox, and I think we ought to be very concerned about this. This is not a good way to govern. We are adopting a very large tax bill without even knowing what our financial circumstances will be, and that we will know within a week. But we have decided we are in such a rush to get this done that we don't care. We don't care about that. We don't care if we're going to be $1 billion in deficit or $1.5 billion. We're going to pass this anyway. And we're going to pass it knowing that we could hold off. We could pass this next week after we know what this deficit will look like. And I just think that the members in this body have to account for that and explain to the public why we are going to go ahead and do this when we don't know what the magnitude of our risk is. I don't think there's any county board or city council that would adopt this kind of a provision, an increase in taxation to its, to their constituents, not knowing what their budget picture was. But we in the state of Minnesota, in the state Senate, we think that's good policy. We think this is good governance. And members, I can only conclude that the reason we're going to do this is because we don't want to know that. We don't want the public to have to look at the size of the deficit we face and ask themselves, well, we're going to have this big deficit, and if past practice is future prediction, we know we're going to have more tax increases being called for to cover that deficit. If it's $1 billion or $1.5 billion, I expect to see next week we're going to have out of the tax committee $1.5 billion in revenue, income taxes, whatever it might be, to cover that deficit. Meanwhile, we've already got done with the legacy tax increase in the sales tax. Now we're going to have the transportation taxes increase, and it's a done deal. We're not going to be able to go back and say do over. And I'm just wondering why this is good policy, why this is good governance. Why does the majority party think it's so important that we need to act on this so quickly that we can't wait to find out what the size of the problem we're facing in our budget is? This is not good governance. I think this is reprehensible. I think it's unfortunate that we have to rush this through for political purposes rather than for good, principled fiscal purposes. Minnesota is already a very highly taxed state. We are already very highly taxed. We're in a period of economic downturn. I don't think there's anybody that really believes that when you're in an economic downturn, what you want to do is load on more taxes. But that's what we're doing. And I guess we believe that if we load on more taxes, that's going to encourage more economic growth. The more taxes we put out there on business and families, the more people are going to, what, invest in their business? Do you think anybody's going to decide maybe to retract their business activity, maybe lay off some people, maybe move out of state? We don't know. But I'm anxious to see what kind of tax proposals we're going to get when the deficit comes true or comes that picture becomes clear next week. What kind of taxes are we going to have then? Is it going to be more sales taxes? Is it going to be property taxes? Is it going to be sales tax, business taxes? How are we going to cover the $1 billion deficit next week? Well, I've gone to the well now twice in the first 2 weeks of this in this Senate to put taxes on for environment and natural resources and the arts, and now we're going to put taxes on for transportation and transit. And I'm mystified. I don't recall back in that election we had last year, 2006, people going around campaigning to do this. I don't recall that. People said we need to focus on transportation, but I don't recall people saying let's put another $8 billion of taxes on the public. I don't recall that. I guess, too, members, I'd like to just remind you as a member from Hennepin County, from one of the metro counties that has this tax that we don't get to have a referendum on. I want to remind members of the issue we had with the Twin Stadium, when there are many of us who represent Hennepin County that said this is bad policy to have a tax, a sales tax, adopted without a referendum. And we all voted against it, as I recall, almost all of us from the Hennepin County contingency. And I'm wondering if the Hennepin County contingency is going to take that same principled view with this provision, that we're going to put on a tax without a referendum, even though the other counties across the state get to have a referendum. We're going to say for the metro area, no referendum. We're going to forbid that. And I just want the rural members, the greater Minnesota members, to ask themselves, why is that fair? Why is that good that the majority of you who represent places outside of these counties that don't get a referendum, why is it fair for you to impose that on us and not let our constituents vote on this as you want to have your constituents vote on it in your county? Why is that fair? Why is that good? So members, in my view, there are many reasons to oppose this bill, not the least of which is just the timing. There is no urgency to do this. The urgency would be to wait and be prudent and be responsible. And we could certainly do that. And so I would ask, regardless of how you feel about the specifics, about the taxes, whether you're for them or whether you're for some of them, just to say, is this really good to do this not knowing what circumstances we're in? So members, I would urge that we vote no on this, that we have it in a bipartisan way, that we vote no, that we step back from this and wait until we know what our financial picture is, and then let's decide what is prudent. There are other ways than this bill to accomplish the goal of providing funding for transportation. There are other ways, and I would argue there are better ways, and we ought to take the time to consider them. So members, I would urge a no vote. And do we have a roll call vote requested, Mr. President?
Well, there'll be a vote on the bill, what I suggest we do is give it third reading if there are no other amendments. Further debate would be in order, but I suggest we have third reading, and then we can certainly have other debate. But
thank you, Mr. President.
There is no issue before us to vote on at this moment. If there is no other further amendments, the Secretary will give House File 2800 its third reading.
House File 2800, a bill for an act relating to transportation finance, appropriating money for transportation activities, providing funding for highway maintenance, debt service, and local roads, etc.
Is there further discussion on House File 2800? Sir Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. President, and members. I wish we were doing this in Senator Murphy's committee. We've spent a good couple hours on this now. Got this little present from the House today. Looks a little different than what the Senate's been talking about for the last couple weeks, but be that as it may, we're going to send this down to the corner office. And, Mr. President, I don't think this is going to become law. So what we will have done is, I guess, made another statement. We have another sense of the Senate. But I think the two fundamental problems with this legislation, the first one is that it was built on a strategy to override a veto. Somewhere a decision was made, probably last summer, that we were going to put together a long-term transportation funding package, but it wasn't going to be in a bipartisan way. It wasn't going to be in reaching out to the governor and the administration. It was going to be built on getting the House to 90 votes. It was built on a strategy to override the veto, and we saw the number go up this evening, 89. So I don't think we're going to see much of this proposal after a couple more days. So that's the first fundamental problem. The second fundamental problem is it's like we've got blinders on here. Is anyone reading their email or answering their phones? The state economist says we are in a recession. Now maybe we just don't have that urgency, that anxiety here on the Senate floor because we haven't had the official forecast. But we all know what's coming, right? We all know what's coming. We're already reading about it. Macy's, hundreds of jobs. There's about 1,000 jobs at Northwest in Eagan, Minnesota right now. And those employees got to be pretty anxious. Oil's at $100 a barrel, gas, $3 a gallon going up. And so our number one job here, get this economy going again. Get Minnesota's economy going again. How do we get entrepreneurs and small business to choose Minnesota, to come here, to stay here, to grow here? And it's not by raising taxes, and it's not by growing government. And it's not by ignoring a recession. So, Mr. President, this is not a moderate bill. This is not a bipartisan bill. And I hope after this dance of this week is over that we'll get back to doing it the way we should do it.
Senator Murphy, or Senator Dibble.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I think we share the goal in this chamber of trying to bolster the economy of Minnesota and the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And unfortunately, we're not making the kind of investments that would, in fact, cause businesses to choose to be here. Because businesses here are stuck in traffic. They can't move their goods. They can't move their services around. People who come here are locked in gridlock. They're spending dozens, hundreds of hours stuck in traffic. People who are dependent on other modes of transportation can't get to their jobs, they can't get to their school, they can't get to their faith community, they can't get to their arts and cultural opportunities. This is something that we do in the public sector to bolster the economy, to bolster the ability for folks in their own lives to succeed, to access services, to access all kinds of opportunities. Our failure to invest in transportation actually costs a lot of money. We can either raise a little bit of money in a sensible, methodical, modest way. This doesn't come close to getting to what we need. Or we pay in lots and lots of other ways. We bleed it out of our pockets in all kinds of ways, in property tax that we pay, tremendous property tax relief in this bill, in congestion that we pay, in the extra gas that we spend. If we don't start to get a handle on our environmental issues, huge, huge costs to pay there. We're polluting our environment. We hear about these days that we can't go outside and jog in the morning. Kids can't go outside and recess. That's because we've got cars gridlocked all over our freeways. Folks are forced to own cars, 2-3 cars. That's another $10,000 hit to the average family budget. We can't develop our cities in the way that people are asking for. Walkable districts so people can get to their services, their amenities. We're not taking advantage of these existing infrastructure. We can forego spending $2 to $3 billion by 2030 if we build out a robust transit system so that we can take advantage of our existing infrastructure. That gets us pretty close to paying for some of the expense that we see in this bill. $86 million a year we can avoid in congestion delays. $172 million a year we can avoid in environmental costs. We'll be more healthy because we won't be breathing all of this terrible air. I mentioned property tax earlier. I mentioned the economic opportunities. If we fail to do this, we are shortchanging the people of Minnesota. We're asking them to spend a whole lot of money in all kinds of different ways. And we're asking businesses not to come here. We're not giving our seniors options. We're not giving our students options. We're not giving young people a reason to stay here. We're not investing in the vitality. Meanwhile, we see federal dollars just sail right over the Twin Cities metropolitan area and land in all kinds of other places. We forego that. Or we borrow and borrow and borrow and spend a whole lot more money in financing, and we see the quality of our system deteriorate in front of our eyes. So it's not about whether or not we're going to pay and not whether or not we're going to ask people to go to some effort. We're asking to do it in a way that makes sense, that allows business and individuals to thrive and succeed and let our economy grow. So this becomes a great place, continues to be a great place. I urge a green vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think members, in your haste to get to a vote to override the governor, you've forgotten and you're overriding the interests of Minnesotans. You're overriding their interests in their family's economy. Do you have concern for their economy? There are Minnesotans now that can't afford their prescription drugs. We've heard about them in this chamber and the health committees. We know there are Minnesotans that can't afford health care. They can't pay their property taxes. Many can't pay their mortgages. And now we're going to add sales tax to things like cleaning supplies and school supplies. We're going to add tax to gas. And many Minnesotans, yes, they have a car. Transit isn't an option. Transit won't be option for them for years. And you're going to ask them to pay taxes on gas to pay for roads and bridges, and more importantly, sales tax to pay for transit. Please don't override the people of Minnesota in your haste and in your political agenda.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Sengem.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, looks like we're about ready to wrap up on this one, and I would only say to people in this chamber and those watching, what are we doing? Are we sure we know what we're doing? We've got a forecast coming forth in about a week. We know it's not going to be good.
And what are we doing? We're, at least in my mind, probably imposing, insofar as my time in this Senate, and I would say, and stand to be challenged, the largest tax increase in the history of Minnesota on the people of Minnesota. This is an enormous bill, $6.6 billion. It's a big bill. It's a lot of money. And think about it. Think about the times. Think about what's going on. And we know we need transportation. Every Republican in this chamber tonight came to the Senate this year wanting to pass a transportation bill, wanting to be participants in a transportation bill. And yet, we weren't allowed. Our ideas weren't part of the discussion. Our ideas were simply ignored. We wanted to be part of that. We wanted to be part of the solution. We certainly don't want to stand out here and vote no. But tonight we're going to have to. We're going to have to, Mr. President, because what we've got before us is not right for Minnesota at this time. I wish it was right. But again, $6.6 billion, that's a lot of money. A couple of weeks ago, and just before session, many of us in Rochester, at least the Rochester delegation, had an opportunity to meet with what we call the Council of Nonprofits. And throughout that room, all we heard was needs, and they're real needs, and we know about these needs. They're needs about health care. They're needs about getting to work. They're very basic. They're very fundamental to life. And now for these same people, we're going to have a 8.5 cent gas tax. If they have a car, they're certainly going to pay an extra license tab fee. If they happen to live in the metro area, they're going to pay a 0.5 cent sales tax in addition to what they're already paying. Frankly, if they live in outstate Minnesota, it's very likely they're going to pay a 0.5 cent additional sale tax as well. So the people of Minnesota, every one of them, in some way, shape, or form, are going to be affected by this bill. And again, it's not that we didn't need it. We need a bill. We just don't need a monster bill. We could have come together in an incremental sort of bill that would have moved Minnesota forward for this time, and yet we refused to do that. So, Mr. President, our side sought compromise. We sought middle ground. We sought a bill that was right for Minnesota at this time, and we didn't find it. We weren't part, if you will, of the solution. And so we stand here tonight wondering, what are we doing? What are we doing as we look to a week from today, when we very well could be looking at $900 million in terms of a deficit, and yet we cast at these same times an enormously large tax increase on the citizens of our great state? So, Mr. President and members, think hard, think long. Think about what we're doing. Is it the right time? I would say no. Do we need a transportation bill? Certainly yes. Were Republicans interested in participating in a transportation bill? Certainly yes. But this is too heavy, way too heavy. And Republicans, join me if you would, in voting no for this bill. Hopefully we'll see it again. We'll see it again as it comes back another time around after the veto, and we'll have a chance to form a good transportation bill for Minnesota, one that can be moving Minnesota forward and at the same time be fair to our citizenry. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
For the discussion on House File 2800, Sarah Murphy.
Mr. President, I know that the hour's growing late. I want to say one thing in all sincerity. Members, today the State Chamber of Commerce took a bold and courageous step forward in helping to broker a deal to make this a reality. And I think that we should all take pause in the movement that the Chamber of Commerce demonstrated. These are businesses that depend upon transportation. And they know that their economic prosperity lies in having a seamless transportation system, one that works for every Minnesotan. They're to be commended, as all the other groups that have worked for the past 5 years to make this bill a reality.
folks, this bill didn't come here in the dark of night. Most folks knew what was the score of the game here. And a lot of people have worked long and hard to make this bill a reality. I would be remiss if I didn't pay my thanks to one of my co-chairs, Senator Dibble. If not for Senator Dibble and Representative Hornstein, we would not have been able to forge this compromise bill. Thank you, Senator Dibble. To Team Transportation, thank you. You guys are absolutely the best. Members, and Senator Michelle, don't take this the wrong way, but earlier you called this exercise a dance. You did. Senator Michelle, the second year that I was chair of this committee, a good friend of mine's daughter got killed on a Minnesota road, and she didn't have to die. She died at the hands of a drunk driver. She died at the hands of a road that was poorly designed. Folks, we lost 503 souls last year on Minnesota roads. I quit dancing in 2005. This is serious business. Lives are at stake, and in greater Minnesota, hundreds of lives are at stake. These are people like Miss Clinworth that lost her life. A young college student who was top of her class in Red Wing, everybody loved her. Everybody that knew her loved her. My kids went to school with her, but she perished. Folks, in the state of Minnesota, we kill more teenagers than any other state. We can do better than that. This is Minnesota. Let's vote green on this bill, and let's provide a safer transportation system for Minnesota.
Members, just to be clear, because there's bonding provisions in this bill, it would take a 60% majority to pass. That is 41 votes. The Secretary will take the roll on final passage. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The Secretary will close the roll. There being 47 ayes and 20 nays, the bill is passed and its title is agreed to.
Mr. President.
Sir Polgar Miller.
Mr. President, is there any work at the desk?
There is no work at the desk. Announcements of Senate interest. The following members will be excused from today's session. Senator Sieben from 11 a.m. to 2:50 p.m. Senator Coring from 11 a.m. to 11:45 a.m. Senator Johnson from 7:05 to 8:10 p.m. Senator Polgar Miller.
Darn it. Mr. President, members, good work today. Thank you for your patience. I would move that the Senate do now adjourn till Monday, February 25th, 11 a.m.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The Senate is adjourned.